The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Under New York State law, it is a felony to falsify business records with intent to defraud and an intent to conceal another crime. That is exactly what this case is about. 34 false statements made to cover up other crimes. These are felony crimes in New York State, no matter who you are. We cannot and will not normalize serious criminal conduct. Why did Donald Trump repeatedly make these false statements? The evidence will show that he did so to cover up crimes relating to the 2016 election. The participant scheme was illegal. The scheme violated New York election law, which makes it a crime to conspire to promote a candidacy by unlawful means. The $130,000 wire payment exceeded the federal campaign contribution cap, and the false statements in AMI's books violated New York law. So instead, Mr. Trump said that he was paying Mr. Cohen for fictitious legal services in 2017 to cover up actual crime committed the prior year. That is why we have a history in the Manhattan DA's office of vigorously enforcing white-collar crime. My office, including the talented prosecutors you saw at arraignment earlier today, has charged hundreds of felony falsifying business records. This charge, it can be said, is the bread and butter of our white-collar work. As this office has done time and time again, we today uphold our solemn responsibility to ensure that everyone stands equal before the law.
What a dramatic story there. You've got the Manhattan DA, Alvin Bragg, during his press conference 2 days ago. I mean, he hits everything there. We will not normalize serious criminal conduct. This is a cover-up relating to crimes of the 2016 election. Here we are again. It's a scheme. He talks about Trump covering up an actual crime and that his office will vigorously enforce the law. It's their bread and butter. What a dramatic story. All about upholding the rule of law. But it doesn't make any sense. What laws were actually violated, as we'll discuss on today's show, Bragg doesn't really explain that. It just feels like one giant distraction. And at the same time, Bragg is up there talking about upholding the rule of law, taking crime seriously. This is a headline from the Daily Mail. Terrifying rap sheets of the 10 worst New York City criminals who were repeatedly released by Manhattan DA Bragg as he focused on Trump indictment. Says, in August, Mayor Eric Adams revealed that the same 10 criminals made up nearly 500 crimes and that 60% of them were still roaming the streets at that time. But aren't New Yorkers, aren't they glad to know that Bragg has their back? He's there looking out for them, holding those white-collar criminals to justice. Well, welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. I'm Sam Livingston. I will be your guest host for today's show. And on today's show, I want to dig into more of the details of Alvin Bragg's indictment of Donald Trump. What's really happening here? How is this happening? Who's pulling the strings? And like I said earlier, it all in so many ways feels like a massive distraction. Alvin Bragg, you know, right when he was elected, really didn't seem interested in pursuing this case. And then he's pressured into it. Now everything rests on this judge and he doesn't want to be the one to dismiss it, even though they all know there's nothing there. They're all being pressured into it. And it's tearing this country apart in so many ways. But what's behind all of it? What's motivating it? And then we'll get into a few more details just along the logic or the rationale of Bragg's indictment. Again, it's an embarrassment. And I was reading some comments on Twitter earlier, and they behave like good communists. Like, they know they're lying, and they don't care. It's just they're exercising power over you. And this is how they set themselves apart. They can break the law. You know they're breaking the law. They know you know, and they can keep doing it. They don't have to explain themselves. They're the elite. First, though, a little poetic justice. This is from CNN on April 4th. This is while all of the drama was unfolding in Manhattan, all the drama of Donald Trump riding in an SUV, getting out of the SUV, appearing before the camera for 3 seconds, sitting in a courtroom, pleading not guilty, getting back on the plane, flying back to Mar-a-Lago. High drama, big TV ratings. While this is happening, CNN also has to write this article. Stormy Daniels, or Stephanie Clifford's, ordered to pay Donald Trump team another $120,000 in legal fees. It says 3,000 miles away from this New York legal drama, Trump secured a substantial victory in another court. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals sided with the former president in his effort to recoup additional legal fees from Stormy Daniels, who had filed and lost a defamation suit against him. Now, this doesn't have anything to do with the Manhattan lawsuit, but essentially Donald Trump libeled or defamed Stormy Daniels. That's what she says. So she took him to court. He's got to spend all this money fighting this battle in court. And then the judge sides with Trump and says, hey, you just wasted this guy's time. You've got to pay his legal fees. I think she's paid something like $600,000 worth of his legal expenses. I mean, these people have just gone through it. Her lawyer, Michael Avenatti, remember, he's in jail, I think, for the next 10 to 15 years for defrauding his clients, and she's one of them. And you've got this huge lawsuit built up against Donald Trump, the president of the United States, and it's based on testimony from a prostitute, a convicted perjurer, and a corrupt lawyer. I mean, this is Alvin Bragg's slam dunk case against the president of the United States of America. I did want to start, before getting into the details of that indictment, with a bigger picture approach. Now, so much of what we're seeing right now is born out of the Mueller investigation, the Russia collusion case. It was that case based on a lie. We'll talk about Clinton and the Steele dossier a little bit later on in the show. Based on a lie, Mueller gets in there. Andrew Weissman gets in there. They don't leave a stone unturned. They know everything about Donald Trump. He comes out of that squeaky clean, but all these other things get turned over because they want to pressure people to turn against him. So they get George Papadopoulos on they get him to perjure himself, 14 days in jail. They go after Flynn, totally lawless and baseless. And then they go after Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen. And then it's in doing that they say, hey, your prison sentence is going to be lighter if you cooperate with us. And by cooperation, we mean help us take down Donald Trump. And then that's where they start learning about the hush money payments. And again, we'll get into all of that. But again, big picture, this is born out of the Mueller investigation. And Mr. Flurry wrote quite a bit, as you know, if you've followed the trumpet for some time, about that lawless investigation. I want to read quite a bit from an article he wrote in August 2019, and it's titled, Can President Trump Get Control of His Own Divided Government? Mr. Flurry says, now it seems the harder the president's, this is Donald Trump at the time, now it seems the harder the president's enemies work to destroy him, the more their own wicked ways are uncovered. Isaiah 1 in verse 4 through 6 is an end-time prophecy that applies directly to America. It says the whole head is sick, talking about corruption in the government. We are getting a stark look at just how grave this sickness is. He says Robert Mueller ran a massive investigation for 2 years into whether President Trump colluded with Russia. He found no wrongdoing by the president, but he inadvertently unveiled a great deal of corruption by the president's enemies. Now the new attorney general, Bill Barr, is doing some investigating of his own, so we are going to learn even more about just how deep the rot goes. And Bill Barr at the time, we talked a lot about it, wrote that memo talking about how Mueller wanted to divine the intentions of Donald Trump. And I've got more quotes on that in a little bit. But again, all of this gets back to the Russia collusion. All of this is based on that original lie. Mr. Fleury says, this is later on in that article, when Barack Obama became president, he said that he wanted to fundamentally transform America. He succeeded on a dangerous scale. The damage his administration did to this country is immeasurable. A little further on, Mr. Fleury says, this should alarm every American. The Justice Department, including the FBI, is duty-bound to be impartial. FBI officials are to uphold the standards of the Bureau and apply the law equally and justly, not to use their own power to alter politics. Now, in many ways, this Bragg indictment, it's an attack on Donald Trump, but it further undermines the entire justice system. What we learned with the FISA case against Carter Page and against the Trump campaign was those judges were happy to be lied to. They didn't care that the FBI was doctoring evidence. They came out later and said, oh, how horrible it was that they did that to us, when they're the ones that got to see all of the documents that the public didn't get to see until 4 or 5 years later. And upon seeing them, it's very easy to see that you're being lied to, but they didn't care because that's all covered up. So who wants to be the one to challenge and step up against the deep state? Bragg, what he did this week over the last 10 days, it's an attack on Trump, but it further erodes and it undermines the U.S. justice system. It's an attack on the rule of law. How could anybody trust the system? What does the rest of the world think watching the great superpower, the United States, squabble over the timing of this, how this statute was violated 7 years ago? This system has been weaponized. It's an attack from within. Alvin Bragg, he's a good Marxist. He doesn't care that he's taking down the credibility of his own department. That's what they all want. The big picture is take down the United States by any means. And they're doing that. It's an attack from within. Now, who, in many ways, who is pulling the strings? Why would Bragg risk his reputation on this when he said earlier he didn't want to push forward with it? Bragg's team, they had their website and they're all very proud of themselves. And that website, the page of that website that tells you who works for him, what each person is doing as it pertains to this Trump investigation, they pulled that down. They don't want people digging into the names of these team members. One of them is named Meg Rice, and she was the one that really oversaw the arraignment of Donald Trump. This is from Fox News. This is about Meg Rice. It says, as part of Rice's goals to radically change the criminal justice system, Rice created the Institute for Innovation on Prosecution in 2016 at John Jay College. She created it, so she works on Bragg's team, which collaborates with prosecution offices, including the Manhattan DA, to bring about racial equity reforms rooted in critical race theory ideology. She left in 2018 and was listed as a leader in numerous reports relating to their agenda. So these district attorneys take their marching orders from this Institute for Innovation on Prosecution, which is a fancy way to, say critical race theory in law, how that should be applied in law. Now, Obama loved this group. They came to the White House in October of 2016, and this was just days before President Trump was about to leave office. Cyrus Vance, he was the former district attorney of Manhattan before Alvin Bragg came in. He's a member of the Institute for Innovation on Prosecution. And it's almost as if Obama, you know, they use all of the criminal justice reform thing as a facade to take over these district attorney's offices. And you can bet Obama wanted to know what was going on in Manhattan, because that's where Donald Trump's base of operations was from, operating out of. So here's this Meg Rice, who starts this group that colludes with Barack Obama. I mean, getting involved in in these district attorneys for state laws. These aren't even federal district attorneys. Jordan Stockdale, he is Alvin Bragg's chief of staff. He deleted his Twitter account, and that was mainly used to retweet posts of why Donald Trump was a criminal. I mean, of course, all of these prosecutors, they're so unbiased, and justice is blind. The judge in this case is Joanne Merchan. I believe he's actually born in Colombia and is now an American citizen. Merchan, he's the guy overseeing Trump's case, the Trump Organization case, where the CFO, Alan Weisselberg, he's sent to Rikers Island. And it's the same thing again. If you want a lesser sentence, you cooperate, help us bring down Trump. Trump commented on Weisselberg and his speech about how the 75-year-old man who gets indicted for fringe benefits is sitting in Rikers Island with gangsters and murderers. Merchant's daughter is named Lauren. She has worked for several Democrat campaigns, including on Adam Schiff's campaign, Kamala Harris's, and Joe Biden's. She has also deleted her Twitter account. Breitbart says, according to Merchant's archived LinkedIn account, she worked as the director of digital persuasion for Kamala Harris for the People from February 2019 through December 2019. And according to the company's website, the Biden-Harris campaign was also a client. Now, I mean, think about the swamp. I mean, all of these people are interconnected, ideologically aligned. I mean, I guess maybe Washington, D.C., you'd have an even harder time. Manhattan has got to be a close second for how aligned everybody there is politically. I think it's 85% votes Democrat, and then it's got to be less than 10% for Republican. D.C. is even more blue. Probably San Francisco is another area that's just as swampy. But everybody in town is connected in some way, and Barack Obama has his fingers in there and likely is pulling the strings. We probably won't know for many years what drove Alvin Bragg suddenly to do this. But there's all these Obama connections, all of these people ideologically aligned to tear down, to attack the United States. Mr. Fleury says in that August 2019 article, he says, they wanted to overthrow the law and government of the land. Robert Mueller, along with his cadre of unelected, extremely biased lawyers, were attempting to overthrow the man who received the votes of 63 million people. That is treason. They did it without any real evidence of a crime. He writes, the way these officials are evading their responsibilities and disdaining the law is extremely dangerous. It undermines the pillars of the rule of law and of freedom in this country. It is turning America into the sort of despotism that plagues dysfunctional nations all over the world. You could see this coming. And Mr. Fleury, based on Bible prophecy, you can see where all this is leading. I mean, he quotes and bases that article, starts that article based on Isaiah 1, prophecies in the book of Isaiah. And that's really what you need to fully comprehend the madness that we're seeing play out in this country right now. He says in this article, the media are supposed to help expose and constrain such abuses of power, but the mainstream media was fully complicit in this treasonous plot, and it continues to this day. If you watched the coverage yesterday, it is sickening to see these people behave like little children, cheerleaders, just salivating at an innocent man being railroaded by the justice system, and then to turn around and say, this is what the founders would have wanted. This is the rule of law. We're a nation of laws, and no one's above the law. Mr. Fleury quotes Rush Limbaugh. He says, radio commentator Rush Limbaugh made this insightful statement last September regarding the way the radical left is treating President Trump. An obsession has gotten hold of these people. They're almost like a demonic possession. There's almost like a demonic possession that has come over these people. It's becoming increasingly difficult, nigh on impossible to even describe, much less comprehend. Mr. Fleury says, that is a fair description of what is prophesied in Revelation 12. I mean, the behavior of these people, you look at a lot of the protests, I mean, that just had to be swarming with demons the way people were behaving. But then the press, hundreds of them, far more press than protesters, just salivating there to get that 3-second shot of Donald Trump as he walked out of the elevator and into the courtroom. And then the psychoanalysis of his furrowed brow. This is a man who is very upset because he's not in control. An orange man's angry because he has to be in control of every situation he's in. And that judge, he has the power. Now, it was all so weird. And go back and listen to any of that. If you want to, I mean, listen to those people. This is CNN sort of moment. That's where you get your facts from. I mean, it's derangement on a level. What do you compare that to in history? Mr. Fleury says, there are numerous other prophecies about this event in your Bible, but how many people understand much of anything about the Bible today? He says, those people were getting control of the government. Justice in the land was destroyed. Rule of law was twisted and perverted. People were losing faith in the government. If this trend had continued, it would have meant the end of our republic. Now, America, as he writes in that article, was saved temporarily by the hand of Jeroboam or Donald Trump. Trump gets in and he exposes it. And there's a war. There's a battle going on right now. I mean, like this trumpet was all about, Donald Trump ready for war. And there is a battle going on here. This was a tweet from a prominent conservative. He says, now Trump is even more dangerous because he finally understands the corrupt game they are playing. If Trump wins again, he would appoint people he can trust and dismantle the deep state, which protected Obama, Clinton, and Biden, and benefited from large-scale treachery at the expense of Americans. I mean, you look at that, the indictment, I mean, from Friday to Tuesday, just how crazy these people were behaving. It seems very desperate in a lot of ways. I mean, there's a division in the Republican Party. You'd think, why don't they just let that play out? Let them, you know, eat their own. But then they have to resurrect this case that federal prosecutors didn't want to take, that the Obama holdovers didn't want to take in the government, that the radical Democrats at the Southern District of New York didn't want to take, a previous Manhattan district attorney didn't want to take, Biden's own DOJ didn't want to take. Then Alvin Bragg comes along and, as we'll go through in a few minutes, publishes a very incoherent indictment to take down the President of the United States. How do you explain what is happening here? Now, this indictment, and as I've said, it's an attack on Donald Trump. It's an attack on the rule of law in a lot of ways. Again, it feels like we're being distracted from something. Isn't that how those communist regimes work? They want your eyes over here while they're doing something behind the scenes. And in many ways, that is what it is. But we have to understand what we're dealing with, what this country is facing. Now, first of all, again, it just felt like a big show. I mean, Bragg made it sound like he's got this new evidence. They're resurrecting this case that was dead. And all the talking heads, they're very excited to see what he has. But the indictment is going to be sealed. So he says Trump's going to be indicted. There has to be this whole show of Trump getting on his plane, minute-by-minute coverage of him in the SUV, John Carl on ABC psychoanalyzing what must be going through Trump's head as he crosses a bridge, and now as he turns right, and now he's stuck at a stop sign. Oh, how that must frustrate him that he can't just roll through stop signs anymore because he's not the president. He has to stop at stop signs like normal people. He must be so upset because he's not in total control. That was the sort of stuff for 7 hours on Tuesday that they were going on about. So Bragg sets them up. It's this big ratings bonanza, and no one knows what the indictment is. It's got to be something new. Why else would he be bringing this now? Bragg seals that indictment, and then he has to publish it, and that's when everybody goes quiet. And now we know why he sealed it, because if he published it on Friday when he announced that Donald Trump was going to be arrested, well, I have a hard time believing Donald Trump would have bothered going to Manhattan and we would have had the experience we all witnessed the last few days. I mean, it all feels so calculated. These are entertainment industries in a lot of ways, Fox and CNN and NBC. But they want to control what you're looking at when you look at it. It's like, the Ukraine, the impeachment number one. Remember how just trust Alexander Vindman and Eric Ciamarella or whatever his name is. I've seen it. Donald Trump, he's calling for Joe Biden to be investigated. I don't even know why that would be illegal if that was the case. Anyway, that goes on and on. You just trust us. We know our sources, anonymous sources. And we've read the transcript. We've seen the transcript. And I remember that afternoon, they finally published the transcript. And it was, this is it? They do this all the time. It was the same with the Mueller report, impeachment one. I had another example in my mind where, you know, they just talk it up and talk it up. Oh, the Flynn transcript. You know, Michael Flynn was colluding with the Russians. He talked about sanctions and there was going to be a quid pro quo. And if you give us this, we'll give you this, blah, blah, blah. And no one gets to see the transcript. Just trust the Washington Post and David Ignatius. They would never lead you astray. They would never tell you. They would never try to skew what was spoken about in that transcript, in that phone call that was illegally leaked and nobody held accountable for. And then you see the transcript and you that's it? That's what they took down a three-star general over? And it's the same thing with this. They go after, they talk it up big, and then you see it. And it's just rot, like Mr. Fleury said. There's nothing there. There's no substance. I've got a number of clips I wanted to play from Alvin Bragg's press conference. Again, I think this just revealed him, exposed him in a lot of ways. Remember when Mueller, after he published the report, there's the big hearing and he gets in front of everyone and says, I can't remember what that was about. I'm not aware of that. I don't actually know that name. I'm not sure what you're referring to. Mueller wasn't running it. He's a figurehead. He is old and has no clue what's going on. They wanted him because he has an R next to his name. He's a Republican. So you see, this is a bipartisan investigation. Meanwhile, Andrew Weissman, I mean, he's crazy. I mean, he puts thousands of people out of work prosecuting businesses who haven't done anything wrong. I mean, what's her show? Jen Psaki. She's got a show on MSNBC now. And one of the big segments was Andrew Weissman and how he designs his home. And now he's this celebrity, but he's the one running the show, hates Donald Trump. I'm trying to remember how I got to that point anyway. That doesn't matter. Okay, so these clips from Alvin Bragg. Again, because that interview revealed, or that hearing revealed, that Mueller was not in control. And in many ways, that's what Bragg's press conference felt like. He doesn't know what's going on. He can't even explain it. You could go ahead and play clip two.
You know, Richie Russell's CNN, why now? I mean, some argue that this is a political move. You're not going to be a political person. The Hurricanes are going to go into the next, you know, political season. Why now?
We conducted a thorough and rigorous investigation, as we're known to do, at the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. I've been doing this for 24 years and am no stranger to rigorous, complex investigations. I bring cases when they're ready. Having now conducted a rigorous, thorough investigation, the case was ready to be brought, and it was brought.
I apologize for the bad audio there, but he can't. These reporters, and they're from NBC, CNN, MSNBC, why now? Why did you bring this case now? Well, we brought it because we're ready. Any new evidence? I won't get into the details, but we're very rigorous and thorough about when we bring these things forward, and it was ready. And I'll can speculate about why that is. I think it has something to do with the statute of limitations. They needed to get this into a courtroom as quickly as they could, and then they can drag it out even further along and hopefully get to do some more digging or put it on the back burner and they'll resurrect it when they need it again. I mean, even ABC, this was their reaction to reading or going through the indictment, clip 9.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's the facts and the law. The facts as laid out today could be a compelling argument. But before they even get there, they're going to have to overcome the legal issues. Question one, what is the crime that prosecutors are alleging escalated this from a misdemeanor to a felony? So far, the Manhattan DA is being pretty vague about exactly what that crime is. There are potential statute of limitations questions here. So expect some not frivolous, very quite serious motions to be made by the Trump team to try to even prevent this from getting to a jury in its current form.
So Bragg told a neat story, but even the ABC affiliates are wondering, what crime does he allege the president of committing? So Tuesday, two things are published. The indictment, which is a formal charge that lays out, you know, here is what we're going to prosecute the president of the United States for. And there's 34 counts in that. And then there's the statement of facts. And that essentially lays out the scheme or the conspiracy. But the problem in the statement of facts is it doesn't actually say what laws were broken. So what is Trump being accused of doing here? Well, right from the gate, you open up the indictment, and that's the important document. That's the document the lawyers are going to look at and say, okay, this is what we're being charged with. We have to create a legal defense to argue why you're not guilty of these things. And Trump's lawyer yesterday said, I was surprised when I read the indictment because there aren't any facts in it. There's nothing in it. I'm not that experienced with this stuff. I've read a few of them reading how they've charged other Trump officials like Roger Stone and George Papadopoulos. And I opened that indictment and I was very confused because it was the same thing over and over again. Like they just copied and pasted one charge and did it 33 more times and just changed the date. And then you look into what the law. So what's the rationale here? At least what are they trying to say Trump did? Well, Donald Trump signs these checks and writes them down as legal expenses. Then his lawyer, Michael Cohen, receives the check, and he documents that check as income rather than reimbursement for the payment to Stormy Daniels. And by the way, the funniest part about that is this accounting error that they say was a falsification of records was, if they recorded it as a reimbursement, it wouldn't have been taxed. But Donald Trump and Cohen called it a legal expense, so that counts as income. And actually, Donald Trump had to pay $260,000 because the tax on that is 50%. So he paid Cohen $260,000. Michael Cohen paid 50% to Stormy and 50% to the state of New York. So the great criminal masterminds are being charged for overpaying in taxes. All of the felonies, the 34 felonies, there are 11 checks made out to Michael Cohen. And these checks, on one of them, I assume the memo was going to say legal expenses. And then that check gets recorded as legal expenses in someone else's book and then in Cohen's book. So it's falsified records in three different places for each check. And 3 times 11 is 33. And then Bragg says there was a fourth place. The other one was accounted for. So that's all it is. 11 checks and the way they were written down or recorded. So this is what Bragg says was falsification of business records. Again, if this were the case, it would be a misdemeanor and a fine. This technically is not illegal, as I'll talk about in a little bit. Now, Bragg says the payments are intentionally falsified to cover up a larger crime. You call that legal expense or you call it a reimbursement. That's essentially what this comes down to. And as Andrew McCarthy says, it can only even be a misdemeanor if someone is being defrauded in this case. Now, Bragg calls it a felony. How is it a felony? So the only law in that indictment, Donald Trump is accused of breaking this law 34 times. It is New York State Statute 175.10, falsifying business records in the first degree. It says, a person is guilty of falsifying business records in the first degree when he commits the crime of falsifying business records in the second degree and when his intent to defraud includes an intent to commit another crime or to aid or conceal the commission thereof. So, like, that's why Bragg keeps saying there is intent to defraud. So all of these checks that say legal expenses when they should say reimbursement are being done. There's a pattern there. And if there's a pattern there, that means there's a big criminal conspiracy that they're trying to cover up. And if they're falsifying the business records to cover up for that big criminal conspiracy, that makes the falsification of those business records a felony because it has to do with this broader crime that was going on. Now, 34 felony charges, each one of those charges carries up to a maximum sentence of 4 years. So if Trump is indicted on all 34 counts or sentenced on all 34 counts, he could go to jail for 136 years. Now, the problem with Bragg's indictment and what that law says, the only reason those misdemeanors can be felonies is if there is intent to defraud and there's a larger criminal aspect to this. The problem with Bragg's indictment is he doesn't charge Donald Trump with any other crime. So it's a circular reason. One can't exist without the other, and Bragg doesn't specify what the other big, broad crime is. This is clip three from Bragg's press conference.
Mr. Bragg, the indictment says that there were 34 false business records. And they were done to conceal another crime, but the indictment does not specifically say what those crimes were. We are assuming, perhaps, that they might be election-related. I'm wondering if you can specify what laws were also broken.
Right. So let me say as an initial matter that the indictment doesn't specify that because the law does not so require. In my remarks, I mentioned a couple of laws, which I will highlight again now. The first is New York State election law, which makes it a crime to conspire to promote a candidacy by unlawful means. I further indicated a number of unlawful means, including more additional false statements, including statements that were planned to be made to tax authorities. I also noted the federal election law cap on contribution limits.
But why weren't there those crimes charged? What can
he
charge with those crimes?
Well, I'm not going to go into our deliberative process on what was brought. The charges that were brought were the ones that were brought. The evidence in the law is the basis for those decisions.
So think about what Donald Trump is up against here. They're accusing him of breaking this law that can only be violated if another bigger crime is being committed. But Bragg doesn't say what that crime is. In the press conference, he says, well, it's actually a state statute about campaign finance violations. But he doesn't charge Donald Trump with violating that. Then he says, oh, they exceeded the cap on campaign finance violations for federal statutes. Okay, well, why don't the feds charge it? So he's out of his jurisdiction for what he can actually charge them with. He just says those crimes are committed. Again, it's like I was saying earlier, they don't have to say what justifies it. They've done it. They got Trump to appear in the courtroom. They arrested him. They don't have to explain themselves. Bragg isn't going to back down. You think he wants to face the mob? The judge isn't going to back down. He doesn't want to face the mob. So this is going to play out in court. And Alan Dershowitz was saying earlier, he's probably going to get convicted because no Democrat wants to be the one to say, yeah, we're going to dismiss this because how is it even possible for Donald Trump to create a defense when the prosecutor doesn't say what crime he committed? I mean, I've just been trying to come up with analogies for this. It's like a bank robber, he goes to steal money and he shoots at people and then he drives away and he runs some stop signs. And then the prosecutor comes along and charges him for running the stop signs. Okay, well, why were you running the stop signs? Oh, because it was attempted murder and attempted a robbery. Again, running stop signs is actually illegal. But there has to be some sort of motive for those smaller crimes to actually happen, and Bragg doesn't say what that is. So in the case of these New York statutes, those little crimes are not crimes if the big one isn't there. And he doesn't say what the big one is, so that means the little one is not a crime. Not the greatest analogy, but just trying to illustrate it in some way. Andrew McCarthy, this is why Trump argues there was no crime at all, not even the misdemeanor falsification of records. It's not even a misdemeanor because the misdemeanor spells out that someone has to be defrauded, and everybody got their money. Everybody was happy. Who's being defrauded? Bragg, he will argue that it was actually the voters of New York, because they're entitled to see and know about this information, as if every millionaire public figure doesn't have an interest in preserving their reputation. And then if you want to get into election interference, Hillary Clinton, she's over there in Brooklyn, Bragg. I'm sure you know the DA in Brooklyn. Talk to them about the Steele dossier, where Clinton actually used campaign money. Donald Trump uses his own money. She uses campaign money, donations from people who are sending them to the DNC, pays them to her lawyer and their legal fees. And what is the lawyer doing with that money? Well, they're not actually doing legal work. They're paying Fusion GPS and Christopher Steele to concoct this story. And they're actually concocting the story based on what the DNC is giving them. And they are smearing Donald Trump. So you've got a cut and dry case of campaign finance violations where the FCC or FEC actually fined her. I mean, that's all that would be done in this case. If this is the case to put Donald Trump in jail for federal crimes, I mean, Hillary Clinton should be in jail for eternity for what they did in 2016. Bragg says that Trump intentionally falsified those payments to conceal the damaging information and thereby interfered in the 2016 election. As if using your own money to do that is the same as using campaign. Again, it doesn't have to make sense. They've done it. It doesn't have to make sense. Jack Smith, the special counsel, what he does doesn't have to make sense. Robert Mueller, it didn't have to make sense. What they're doing in Georgia doesn't have to make sense. The witch lady on the jury wants it to be done. They've spent so much time on it. It'd be such a shame if we spent all this time and nothing came of it. It doesn't matter what the law is. No one will stand up to the lawlessness, and it's an attack on the justice system. It's America under attack. One more clip from Alvin Bragg, clip 7.
So the charge is falsifying business records. The charge requires, as I specified, criminal conduct that was concealed. One of the concealed crimes we allege is New York State election law. So we went through in our statement of facts, which I think many of you have in front of you, goes through things including, text messages, emails, contemporaneous phone records, multiple witnesses. All of that will be, as you saw in the fall, borne out in a public courtroom in downtown Manhattan.
Again, doesn't have to explain himself, doesn't do it in the indictment, doesn't do it in the statement of facts, doesn't do it at the press conference. Hey, you plebs, you don't deserve to know. Just know we'll revisit this in December of this year or January of next year, or maybe we'll bring it up in November of 2024. You don't deserve to know. We know. Just trust us. I mean, he doesn't even try to explain. Okay, well, if you're saying the bigger crime was election interference, why aren't you charging him for that? And if you're not charging him for that, then it doesn't elevate any of the misdemeanors to be felonies. So what's the criminal conspiracy? What's the scheme that they're trying to cover up? Bragg says, you don't need to know. We've charged him. I mean, some people, Andrew Weissman, he's going on and saying, well, it's the frequency of the crimes that makes it a felony. Again, not true. I mean, it's just legal gymnastics. They will it to be true. And nobody brought this case forward the last 7 years. They're willing it to be true. I mean, it's just like Bragg again. He knows he's not going to drop it. The judge isn't going to do it. He's as anti-Trump as they come. Maybe there will be an appellate court. I don't know how that whole system works there in the state of New York. Here is Jonathan Turley, again, very vocal about how lawless this prosecution is. This is clip 10.
And I was anxiously waiting for this indictment, and I'm flipping through, and I'm after our talks again and again and again about the bootstrapping of the misdemeanor to make it a felony, looking for the underlying felony.
Yeah.
Were you looking for it too?
Yeah, it's like Orient Express without the body. I mean, you're looking for it, and it just never comes up. And the weird thing, I've never seen an indictment quite like this one. That is the key linchpin. That's how you get beyond the statute of limitations. I know a lot of judges that would have been not too pleased to receive an indictment like this and would have said, you know, what the heck is this? I mean, what are you alleging? And Bragg just sort of waved it off and said, I don't have to really say. But my question is, how did the grand jury understand what it was doing?
Again, exposing the legal system, the injustice system in the United States. These are legal experts. They're reading it and saying, I don't understand what's going on here. You're telling me a jury, I don't know how many people are on a grand jury. I mean, it's 24 or 28, something like that. You're telling me a majority of them understood this enough to approve for the president to be indicted? They don't care. It's like the FISA judges. They're happy to be lied to because it's get Trump. And they don't want to be the ones to say, I'm going to get in your way. They don't want to face that. None of them do. Another clip here from that interview, clip 11.
But it really raises concerns as to how well the grand jury understood these key linchpins. Because this thing has the feeling of like a legal Slurpee. It's instantly satisfying, but has no nutritional value. There's really nothing there.
You didn't see anything that we didn't already know. I mean, we were going in saying, even if there are all these counts, now we know there are 34, but as far as the there, tying it to the federal crime, you're assuming it's federal election law, right?
I am. Look, the thing is, this is basically what we expected. You had people like Lanny Davis, who represents Michael Cohen, saying, I'm warning you, there's going to be a lot of new crimes here, and there's going to be a lot of new facts. Well, it wasn't. I mean, this was the business falsification theory that we've talked about. The only surprising thing is that Bragg seemed to have solved the question of his authority through ambiguity. He just removed any direct references to what this underlying offense was.
And he was asked about it in the press conference and essentially said, I don't have to tell you.
I don't have to tell you. Turley said his authority through ambiguity. He just removed any direct references to what the underlying offense was. And then I forgot about this. He comments about Michael Cohen's lawyer, Lanny Davis. You might remember him from a few years ago. He was the one that told CNN, I got an anonymous source that told me Donald Trump knew all about this, this, and this. And CNN, happily publishes that. And then they're pushed a little bit. Who's your anonymous source? Well, it turns out the anonymous source is Lanny Davis. So Lanny Davis, proven liar, lies to CNN, but they still have him on all the time. I mean, why not? They hire back Andrew McCabe and Peter Strzok. So Lanny Davis, he just lied to us a couple times and got us to report fake news, false information, publishing the lies. Rachel Maddow said, we can't play Donald Trump's speech tonight because there's just a big risk with publishing lies like that on our network. And it's a big risk. They've been sued. Remember Nick Sandman? He sued them. They're losing tens of millions. I think that case might have been $100 million, somewhere thereabout. I don't know what they settled on. Again, non-disclosure agreements. You can't say what it was. So everybody's signing those all the time. Turley, though, I don't have to tell you. Think about how arrogant that attitude is. Andrew McCarthy. Again, the list of never-Trumpers coming to his defense, and the Democrats are saying, oh, they're just so eager to run back into Trump. They need Trump. I think it would tell you if these rabid never-Trumpers are talking about how crazy this legal argument is, you have a problem. And it's not even just never-Trumpers. It's a lot of Democrats. Andrew McCarthy, Bragg's case against Trump is utterly incoherent. He says there may not be enough space in the megaverse to describe the sundry flaws in the Manhattan District Attorney's indictment against the former president of the United States. It fails, despite its 34 counts, to state a crime. It is time barred under the statute of limitations. He says the DA's biggest problem is that his indictment is utterly incoherent. There's nothing illegal about NDAs. And then he talks about the timing of these payments. So if the hush money was paid before the election, Donald Trump is accused of covering up by paying, reimbursing Michael Cohen, but all of those payments, the alleged falsification of records, are made in 2017, after the election. So somehow he's backtracking to interfere in the 2016 election by falsifying the business records that covered up the hush money payment to defraud the people of New York from knowing this about the president of the United States. And at the same time, Hillary Clinton is paying to publish false stories. But if Donald Trump attempted to pay to catch and kill those stories, that would be a campaign finance violation, right? You following? It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to make sense. They will it to be true. Even Never Trumpers and Democrats know it's a joke. Eli Lake, he calls it Alvin Bragg's dangerous stunt. He says, is it worth it upending 230 years of American norms and customs to charge for the first time a former president with a felony? Vox, very, very left-wing, the dubious legal theory at the heart of the Trump indictment. It says Bragg built his case on an exceedingly uncertain legal theory. Wall Street Journal, Bragg's case against Trump leaves ample defense openings. Washington Post, the Trump indictment is a dangerous leap on the highest of wires. They all want Trump to be taken down, but they all know this is shaky ground and you're opening the door. Jeff Greenfield works for ABC, he's worked for all of them over the last 30 years, tweeted almost consensus skepticism and disappointment about the strength of this indictment on CNN, including among highly non-Trumpers. ABC News correspondent Sarah Isker, this is the sloppiest statement of fact I've ever seen in a major case. These are meant for reporters and non-lawyers to lay out the case. This thing is clear as mud. It is written for the press. Just like what Mueller and Weissman would do. Here's some red meat. Take it. Run with it. Doesn't matter what the truth is. And as always, there are some holdouts. The New York Times, Norman Eisen, anti-Trump lawyer. This was their title. We finally know the case against Trump, and it is strong. Just a clown world. And I've got quite a few more points here from Jonathan Turley and Tom Elliott talking about how these Democrat prosecutors are just trying to divine, you know, criminal intent. Remember that from Mr. Flurry's article and from Bill Barr's letter? This is from that 2019 article by Mr. Flurry. He says, this is diabolical reasoning that would destroy the president's authority to enforce the law. This is not the way the law works. These men who are bringing down America are psychoanalyzing people, searching for corrupt motives. But that isn't the way the law is. It deals with clear and specific actions. And none of that is there. They will it to be true. They divine the intentions. Mr. Flurry says, these men think, this is talking about Mueller back in 2019, but all of it, again, applies today. These men think they can divine whether Trump acted with a corrupt motive. That is a well-chosen word William Barr used, and it really is appropriate for what they are doing. It means to prophesy, to guess, to find out by intuition. Mueller thinks he can perceive corrupt motive based on intuition and is basing his case against the President of the United States on intuition. It's ludicrous. He says another definition of divine as an adjective is of, like, or from God or a God. Mr. Flurry says that too is appropriate because these men are acting as if they are God. Do you really want to be ruled by someone who thinks he can sit there and act like God, telling you that you have a corrupt motive? Do you want these men with corrupt minds judging you? I mean, that spirit, that lawless spirit of Antiochus, it's everywhere in this country right now. And you have to have America under attack to understand. I mean, you could spend all day trying to dissect the legal analysis here, but look at the big picture of what is happening to this country, what their ultimate goal is. Think about what's being revealed now. So much, so clear that even rabid Democrats are saying this is politicization of the justice system. America Under Attack says prophecies in Amos 7 and 2 Kings 14 reveal why God is saving America through Jeroboam. He is not going to allow Mr. Obama and the radical left to blot out the name of Israel. He will expose this conspiracy so the world can see the truth. America's temporary resurgence gives people a window of time to repent, but that window will not remain open indefinitely. Request this book if you haven't. Study it thoroughly. It's the only way to comprehend the events you're seeing in the United States today. If you haven't requested that book, call us toll-free, 1-866-930-3024. If you want to email us any comments, you can send those to td@thetrumpet.com. Thank you very much for joining us on today's show, and Mr. Stephen Fleury will be back with you again tomorrow.